The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, I'm reading this NBC article, and, you know, the one line that just keeps grabbing me is, quote, the Russian-born American lobbyist served in the Soviet military and emigrated to the U.S. where he holds dual citizenship. American lobbyist. These are the folks that we've got, you know, lobbying our government and also in, you know, high-level meetings with, you know, the number two or three guy with the future president of the United States. Hey, who could see that there would be a problem there? Who could possibly see? And now we find out that there were, I guess, more people in this meeting outside of the handful of Junior and Kushner and Manafort and the woman lawyer. And there was a publicist, and now you've got the Russian-American lobbyist, and maybe two other people, maybe a grinder with a monkey, who knows? People behind the curtains, man in the sky, who knows? And it's weird to me because Trump Tower should have cameras, as Michael Esker pointed out, should have cameras everywhere. So this should be pretty simple to figure out who came and went. Anyway, here to talk about the latest, the mystery. Where's the Russian spy? We've asked our good friend Andrea Chalupa to come talk with us. Andrea, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course.
So, again, you know, I look at this whole scenario. It just started off as there were a handful of people, informal meeting about adoption. Now it looks like there was a whole gaggle of folks there.
Right, and it was never a meeting about adoption, ever. What that refers to is that when the U.S. passed sanctions against Russia in response for its aggression and invasion of Ukraine, Putin's Kremlin, quote unquote, retaliated by essentially punishing itself, as they tend to do with their sanctions. They essentially punished themselves, cutting off Justin.
Not happening. Not hearing you. God, I hate cell phones. No wonder Art Bell left radio. She's not there. All righty. Well, not happening. Appreciate it, Andrea.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm not hearing a word. Anyway, you know, look, you know, when you look at this stuff, the sad reality is, and the frustrating part of this, is that there's all of this stuff going on, and there should be a way for us to figure this out. There really should be. Let's see if Andrea's connection's any better.
How's now? Is it better?
A little bit. Now, you don't sound like you're being beat up by water.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. It's just been, like, a really crazy time. It's been very busy for me.
So let's go back to this. You were saying about the sanctions. What were you saying?
Yes. So you started off by saying that there was this mysterious meeting in Trump Tower with you know, we don't know exactly who is. There's like a mysterious eighth person that we don't know who it is yet, that this meeting was called under the guise of discussing adoptions. Well, that, of course, is simply not true. When you hear adoptions in the situation, what it's referring to is that when the U.S. sanctioned Russia for its invasion of Ukraine, Putin's Kremlin responded, as it typically does, by essentially sanctioning itself, by hurting itself. And what they did in this case was they ended adoptions of Russian orphans going to the West. They essentially used children as shields. They hurt many families that are expecting to, you know, welcome Russian orphans into their homes. It's a very disturbing way to retaliate. And so essentially by cutting off adoptions to the West, to the U.S., what these sanctions did retaliatory sanctions did by Putin's Russia was it just hurt innocent victims. And so what you have here, you have these Russian lobbyists, the Russian lawyer, the Russian American lobbyists with links to the Kremlin. You have them, you know, claiming they met with Don Jr. to talk about the innocent, happy sounding topic of adoptions, when in reality, what they're really discussing was, hey, can you help us get sanctions lifted, and can you stop this pesky Magnitsky Act which sanctions people inside Russia for human rights abuses.
And, oh, by the way, give us all of our stuff back.
Yes, exactly. Give us our spy compounds back in Long Island.
And you know, you look at this and you go, knowing this, and I mean, you would have to think Manafort of any of them. You could say, you know, Junior's an idiot. You could say Kushner's naive and ambitious. But Manafort should know this, that this meeting had to be part of that, and that the optics would be horrible.
Manafort knew exactly who these people are, so that's without question. Manafort is an old season pro. Frank Foer, and I believe Slate, had a brilliant deep dive into Manafort in spring 2016. And it shows you what an institution within the Republican Party Manafort is. And there was a point with his lobbying firm, there was a point where you could not get elected to Congress as a Republican without his blessing, without his firm's support. So Manafort is a mastermind. I know we make fun of him on Twitter because he looks like an extra in The Sopranos. But don't ever underestimate Paul Manafort. He's absolutely brilliant, and he's always playing chess.
No. Yes, the reality is, when we were at the conventions, there were people who were interning for different organizations who were just dying to trip over themselves near him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was brought in to essentially protect Trump from the Republican establishment because he was such a core player in the Republican establishment for so many decades. And he knew how to navigate, negotiate these conventions. And he was there to make sure that Trump had the delegate count that he needed in order to secure the party's nomination. And it couldn't be taken away from him.
Let me ask you this.
So he's an old pro. He knew exactly what this meeting was about and who these Kremlin-linked individuals are.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, someone had asked earlier, you know, aren't there video cameras? Isn't there a way to find out who was there? I mean, all of this. First, it was just a handful of people. Now you've got eight. Maybe there was someone behind the curtain. Who knows? Is there no way of actually finding out? Does the Secret Service have a log? Do we get those logs? I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, you know, officials might know, and it might not be released to the press yet. They had some reluctance initially, and NBC News even mentioned the name of the Russian-American, Russian-born, former Soviet intelligence lobbyist who was in the room. So the information could very well be in the hands of the people who need it. It just might not be in the press yet.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Am I wrong to kind of be freaked out by the NBC, you know, here's this guy, a Russian-born, former military intelligence officer, American lobbyist. Am I wrong for being freaked out by that?
No, I mean, it's extremely disturbing. And as you've seen, like, Intel experts, you know, one interviewed recently on Maddow, and Bill Browder himself, who is on the front lines of fighting for the Magnitsky Act. Sergei Magnitsky was his lawyer who was killed for being a whistleblower. So the Magnitsky Act is, of course, there to honor him and protect other whistleblowers within Russia. So, you know, Bill Browder and this Intel expert, his name escapes me, who's on a matter recently, said, once you are an Intel officer in the Russian army, you're always an Intel officer. It does not leave you. You know, you're always going to have that network. You know, they invest a lot of money in developing their spies. So it's very difficult to sort of break away from that. And this guy is, Rinat Akhmetshin, he's clearly a willing participant in pushing the Kremlin's interests and fighting against the Magnitsky Act.
Now, I understand this is someone that you've actually met.
Yes, I met him, funnily enough. It was last December in Washington, D.C. A dear friend of mine, an American friend who works a lot with cultural initiatives to build bridges between Ukraine and America, she threw a beautiful fashion show in the Society of Cincinnati in the heart of Washington, D.C. This was right after the election. Trump had just become the president-elect. So it was a very dark, disturbing time in our country. And I remember being in the marble halls of the Society of Cincinnati, looking at these beautiful oil paintings of our founding fathers, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and just being so haunted by how I felt like, you know, we had betrayed them by allowing this foreign hostile element, this Trump campaign, to invade the Oval Office. And I felt very sort of this horrible sense of, my God, are we going to survive this as a country? You know, because the founding fathers warned us repeatedly, like George Washington's last final address was, you know, watch out for hostile foreign infiltration. That is what will bring us down. He warned us about this. And here I was, you know, in the Society of Cincinnati, which was set up by the founding fathers to honor Revolutionary War veterans. And I'm in there and I'm meeting a Russian spy who essentially helped engineer this hostile takeover of our White House with Trump getting elected president through nefarious means. So that was quite chilling. That was quite disturbing, as you can imagine experiencing. I met him. It's funny because I was with, you know, I had a lot of friends at this event because I'm very active in the Ukrainian-American community. So I had a lot of friends at this event. And so one of my friends is, and there are quite a few Capitol Hill staffers there who work on issues around Ukraine and Russia. And one of these staffers said to me, "Oh, my God, this is really annoying. FSB agent is here." You know, this staffer at the time identified him as an FSB agent. Others have said GRU. They're pretty much the same thing. They're both, it just means spies. And so later we bumped into him and I was introduced to him. And I have to tell you, he's very affable. He laughed very easily. You know, we were very cheerful in our chit chat. And what I was really struck from that conversation, the brief conversation we had, is what an amazing trait, what a benefit it is in a spy to have somebody who laughs easily and is so easygoing. I mean, that's really what you want. I just thought that was sort of what struck me at the time. You know, later when we sat down for the fashion show, I sort of was glancing around the room at one point. I look over my shoulder and he's standing like directly behind me against the wall, just glaring in my direction. And that could have been because I was sitting in a row with quite a few, you know, political and media folks. But I just thought that was like so interesting. He went from being very affable to my face, and then behind my back, he's just glaring and just looking like his mind's at work, thinking about something. I don't know.
So yeah, that he's was putting my, you on notice.
I don't know. I think I was definitely sitting in a row with some interesting people, that people that would certainly be of interest to him and on his radar. And obviously my sister at this point being, you know, an American who lives in Washington, D.C., whose own home has been the target of harassment, an attempted break-in in the middle of the night, her car broken into twice and trashed inside, you know, a threatening death metal song downloaded onto her phone, you know, with a very explicit threat against her life. When she Googled the lyrics and realized the song was about a woman's final moments after she's been assassinated. So all these horrible sort of active measures that targeted my sister in 2016 when she was researching Paul Manafort, and no one was really believing her about, you know, how serious of a threat this guy was and the larger implication of his involvement on Trump's campaign. You know, I sort of had to wonder when I met that FSB or GRU agent, you know, whatever, that Kremlin spy, I had to wonder, you know, was he involved at all in orchestrating the harassment that was targeting my sister all year? Did he recognize me, you know, through that by chance? You know, so it was just very sort of disturbing run-in with him. And I would not be surprised, given his background in digging up embarrassing black PR to destroy opponents. You know, his background in organizing the hacking of emails of opponents. I would not be surprised if he were a key player in Trump-Russia collusion.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, you're judged by the company you keep, and I'm looking at the company that they're keeping. Not good stuff. But here's the thing. I mean, you've got those, and I just read an article by David Sirota here recently with an interview with one of the founders of Pussy Riot, who is saying that, you know, all of this obsession we are having with Russia, it's just a distraction. That there's nothing there, you know, Putin's a weak guy, you know, just kind of this, you know, this, you know, discarding all of what we're seeing in front of us. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, that's funny because it depends on which member of Pussy Riot they interviewed, because, you know, it's a coalition of artists. I can tell you that the two that were imprisoned, they both, at least, you know, during the election, and right after Trump were elected, they had very strong warnings for the American public. They said, "We laughed at Putin too when he first took over." You know, and then the New York Times did a wonderful interview with one of the two women in Pussy Riot that was arrested, that came out just right after the election, saying, you know, this is how an autocracy works. It takes over very quickly. So I'd be interested to know exactly which one they interviewed. But I think the larger message that we do get from Russian opposition leaders is that you have to treat Putin like he is a weak person and stand up to him, because he's like the Wizard of Oz. He's literally like a little tiny man that casts a big shadow. But at the heart of it, he is like a little tiny man. And you do have to, the only thing he understands is if you say, you know, if you isolate him, if you sanction him, if you stand up to him, if you don't put any blocks up, if you don't hold him to account, if you just give him permission to keep going, keep hacking your elections, keep sending his spies here. You know, CNN just reported that there's over 100 spies that intel agents believe have, you know, and, you know, are now in the U.S. Wow. So, you know, if you don't hold Putin to account, then the Russian aggression is just going to keep going. You know, Ukraine is a model for us, because Ukrainians have been fighting for their independence against Russia, and they've been standing up to Russia, and they've thwarted Putin's plans for grabbing more of that country. Putin initially had ambitions to reclaim the Russian imperialist mythology of Novorossiya, New Russia. They're going to slice off a nice big chunk of Ukraine and cut off its access to the sea. Well, that never happened because Ukrainians resisted, and thousands, you know. And so you have to resist Russian aggression. That's the only way that you can curb it and stop it.
Her name was Nadzhda Tolokanova. Am I close to that? But that was her name, and I could send you the article. But here's the thing, you know, like kind of the last thought that I wanted to get in, you know, because we're seeing all this stuff. Is there a point at which, you know, we actually find out what happened? And is there a point of, or is this just more of the, things are going to keep getting thrown at us, and eventually we just throw up our hands and walk away?
Well, I think everyone has to think in terms of decades and not years. And I think, you know, if the floodgates or Russian aggression are allowed to stay open, as they currently are under the Trump regime, then you're going to have a lot more Russian infiltration of not only the U.S. government, but also U.S. businesses, corporations. You know, there's a chance that they might even get control of the oil giant Citgo. And then, you know, so Russia in the past, as we've seen in Eastern Europe, has wielded its control of energy companies as a weapon. They've threatened to, deny energy products to countries that didn't give them what they wanted. So if they do that here, they could wield that weapon against us too. So I think we have to take very seriously, I know some people are tired of hearing about it. You know, guess what? I'm tired of hearing about global warming, but I still read the articles. I still keep myself informed, because that's a crisis. It affects all of us. So think of you know, Russia's aggression against the U.S. as a matter as urgent to us as global warming. It's something that you can't ignore just because you want to. You no longer have the luxury to ignore it. It's a very serious, urgent problem, and it's only going to get stronger.
You're absolutely right. Andrea, I appreciate you taking time for us. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you so much, Rick. Appreciate it.
As always, great stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. For working people. I got no time for living. Yes, I'm working all the time. It seems to me I could live my life a lot better than I think I am. I guess that's why they call me. They call me the working man.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.